be yesing.
W5BSA repeater automatic control operator change over M4. W5BSA repeater.
Good evening, folks. QST, this is Marty, WV5Y. It's once again time for another edition of the Houston AmSatNet. This net meets on Tuesdays to discuss topics related to satellites, balloons, and other amateur-related items. This is net number 1626, and it's 8 p.m. Central Time on Tuesday, August the 26th, 2025, which in UTC time is Wednesday, August the 27th, 2025 at 0100.
CL-123.
This is a directed net, and all calls should go through net control, and this net is dedicated to Andy McAllister, W5ACM. And thanks to Joe, W5BSA, we're on the 145.19 repeater in West Houston. Also, on the 443.325 repeater in Katy, both of those have a peel tone of 123.0, as I just said. And then there's also links to the 146.7 repeater downtown and the network it's connected to. And then there's the AMSAT DMR Talk Group 98006, YSF Fusion 11689, All-Star Node 572580. When those things are working, and then there's Echo Link, and that's at star AMSAT star. Okay, I will now take any check-ins.
This is. Good evening, Marty, W5BSA, checking in.
Okay, good evening, Joe. Glad to have you aboard. And, yeah, we witnessed an awesome flight there from Starship, from SpaceX. And that was the flight test, suborbital flight test number 10. And it went extremely well there. Pretty much accomplished all of their objectives. They spit out those eight Starlink simulation satellites there out of their big Pez dispenser, and the little door opened and they all shot out, and then they got a controlled reentry and splashdown in the Indian Ocean in the sight of the buoy that had the camera on board. So they got a picture of it coming down into the ocean and everything, so it was really awesome to see there for Starship. Okay, well, we're going to start here with our first announcement from the South Texas Balloon Launch Team. They do hold their monthly meeting at the second Wednesday of the month, and that's at 4:30 p.m. here at a local restaurant. And then at 8 p.m., they have a Zoom meeting, and that takes place on the Internet over at k5wh.net/Zoom. So we appreciate Walter putting that on for us. And keeping South Texas Balloon Launch Team going, he and John, AB5SS. So the last post he made was he was testing out some new Pecan transceivers and balloon packages. So then one of them had a camera on board. So we'll see how that fans out here in the future. Okay, this is Marty, WV5Y with the Houston AmSatNet. You can call and check into this net with a quick phone check-in to 713-467-9870. You can send an APRS message to West Virginia 5 Yankee, and no dashes and no numbers, as Andy used to like to say. Or you can send an email, and that would be to wv5y@comcast.net. And we want to thank Bruce for making the URLs available on this evening on the website, and that's over at www.amsatnet.com. The AmSat News Service Bulletins are a free weekly news and information service of AmSat, the Radio Amateur Satellite Corporation. ANS publishes news related to amateur radio in space, including reports on activities of a worldwide group of amateur radio operators who share an active interest in designing, building, launching, and communicating through analog and digital amateur radio satellites, and also doing TV now. And the news feed on www.amsat.org publishes news of amateur radio in space as soon as our volunteers can post it. So please send any amateur satellite news or reports to ans-editor@amsat.org. Okay, if you'd like to see the ANS Bulletin showing up in your inbox, you can sign up for a free email delivery of the AMSAT News Service Bulletin, and that's via the ANS list. So to join the list, you go to mailman.amsat.org/Pastorius/lists/ans.amsat.org. Okay, GMSAT's Blueberry Jam project is to develop open source CubeSat transponders for amateur radio. The Japan Amateur Satellite Association, or JAMSAT, has announced the launch of the Blueberry Jam Initiative, a new project design and build an open-source multi-mode transponder for CubeSats. A kickoff meeting was held on May the 3rd with 15 participants, marking the start of what is envisioned as a flagship development effort for the organization. The Blueberry Jam project centers on creating a versatile linear transponder that can be integrated into 1U CubeSats while also being scalable to larger 3U and 6U platforms. The design is intended to support both traditional linear operation and potential digital enhancements such as delay modes and data handling. The first demonstration unit, an engineering model, is targeted for completion by mid-2026 and will be offered to universities and satellite developers for potential flight opportunities. Jerry Buxton in 0JY, the AMSAT VP of Engineering, commented, AMSAT NA is excited to see the Japan Amateur Satellite Association's commitment to open source development and collaboration with amateur satellite organizations around the world with their Blueberry Jam initiative. We are pleased to offer our help in this collective effort by providing JAMSAT with any schematics and documentation from AMSAT's open source, open access projects developed to date, as well as those being introduced this year. This includes our flight-proven LTM-2 linear transponder module that has flown successfully on satellites deployed by two world-class universities and currently still operating on MO-122 and MESAT-1. The LTM, or the Linear Transponder Module, provides telemetry downlink support for the host science missions and satellite health, as well as direct control of the LTM amateur radio usage. A third university is set to carry the latest version of LTM, which will fly on Golf T and Fox Plus on their upcoming mission that is currently under construction. A core philosophy of the project is openness. JAMSAT has pledged to make the development process, design documents, and results available to the amateur community. Hardware costs are expected to be covered by JAMSAT, while individual participants will bear their own incidental expenses. By sharing the design broadly, the group hopes to encourage adoption by multiple satellite missions with the goal of eventually deploying the transponder on as many as 10 spacecraft. Technical discussions during the kickoff highlighted the demand for new linear transponder capability in amateur satellites, as well as recognition that digital features will be important for future operations.
DL-123.
Considerations include dual channel command and data handling, efficient microcontroller use, and antenna and power system constraints inherent to CubeSats. The team also noted the potential to establish a ground-based test station to exercise the transponder under realistic conditions before flight. Jerry Buxton also said, "We are also very happy to share AMSAT's work on its upcoming SDR Gen 2, an SDR that provides all mode functionality and continuous coverage from 144 MHz to 6 GHz, providing 5 and dime capability, that's 5 and 10 GHz, especially now that there's a 10 GHz, well, actually it's almost 2.4 GHz, is going on the ISS for TV, and the 5 and 9 capability will be in a format to fit 1U or larger CubeSats. We look forward to supporting JAMSAT and promoting more international collaborations and continue to keep amateur radio in space. Coordination for the project will be managed initially through mailing lists with Slack and other online tools supporting more detailed technical exchanges. Meetings will be held on an ad hoc basis until a regular schedule is established. Participants also suggested supplementary seminars to review background information and prior work for the benefit of newer contributors. By positioning Blueberry Jam as a fully open source design, JAMSAT hopes to strengthen international collaboration and demonstrate Japan's continued leadership in the amateur satellite community. With a development horizon stretching into 2026 and beyond, the project has the potential to become a cornerstone payload for future CubeSat missions and to provide valuable new communication opportunities for amateur operators worldwide. Okay, we look forward to getting updates on that one. And we want to say thanks to JAMSAT and to Jerry Buxton, N0JY, the AMSAT VP of Engineering, for that update and information. This is Marty, WV5Y in the Houston AMSAT net, and we're just at about the quarter past the hour here through our net, so we're going to take a quick standby and look around and see who we've got checking in. Okay, let's see, K5ENG, we got Dr. Charlie, he's over there in West Houston. So we haven't talked to him in a week or so. Let's see, we've got Dale, WD0AKO, up there in Moorhead, Minnesota. He does the backup archiving of the audio for the website. And I know he was following along with Starship action there from SpaceX because he was sending me stuff on Messenger. So we're really glad Dale does the backup stuff for us because we have had to use it once or twice in the past. Let's see, we've got Vern out there, WA0RCR. He's in Winston, Missouri. and he transmits our net on 1.860 megahertz, full carrier AM, as he likes to say, and that's at 5:30 p.m. and 9 p.m. Central Time on Saturdays. So we surely do appreciate Vern putting us on the top band. Okay, we can talk to Kai in 6ZZO. He's one of our podcast listeners who listens via podcast and then checks in, calls and checks in like the next day or two. And he's out there in McKinleyville, California, the far northern part of California, on the coast, where the weather is like nice all the time. Okay, we appreciate hearing from Kai there. And let's see, from APRS check-in, so it's been quite a while since we've had anything from APRS. Looks like just like we've still done. Okay, we've got the Internet Relay Chat system going here. And we've got Ken, AK0A, Clay, KG4OZW, Brian, KG4WIJ, Renee, NZ9T, and Bob, K8WX. And we've got W8QHV hopping there joining us. And then there's Rachie, and she's out there listening with Clay. So we'll wish her a special good evening this evening. Okay, let's see here. From Echolink, we've got Andrew, KC5LWY. He's down there in Galveston. And so we hope he's doing good there this evening. And we appreciate his comments there. We've got Mitch, 80HJ. He's up there in Jackson, Minnesota. Of course, he's tonight's AMSAT News Service Bulletin's editor. And puts on the Wednesday night AMSAT event that takes place on digital, and that's on DMR, and that's the digital AMSAT Digital Thought Group 98006, and then there's YSF Fusion of 11689, as well as other connections as well. So we appreciate Mitch putting on that Wednesday night AMSAT event at 9 p.m. Central Time. And, of course, if you're going to be doing any roving and making any grid squares available to satellite operators, then you might check into that net and let those guys know. Okay, we want to say hello to Indolf, N6UTC, and he's out there in Long Beach, California. Okay, also on Echolink, we've got Damien. Hello to Damien, AG9T, up there at Compto, Wisconsin. He's one of our longtime listeners. And then we've got Bruce, KK5VO, up there in Rowan Forest. And, of course, he's the AMSAT awards guy. And so, of course, thanks to him, even www.amsatnet.com. He's got information up there on how you can get certificates and awards for making satellite contacts. And then there's also more of that at amsat.org. There's also, they give you the status of the satellites and the frequencies that they're operating on. And then there's information about the upcoming symposium. And then there's even the store, and you can actually buy satellite antennas and be heard loudly and plainly on those satellites when you get all that set up. So we appreciate AMSAT.org there very much. Okay, this is Marty, WV5Y, with the Houston AMSAT Net. All right, we've got Dave, WB7DRU, out there also on Echolink. And he's been listening. He's one of our listeners then for decades. And he's up there in Howard Lake, Minnesota. So we want to wish a special hello to Dave. And he's been with us ever since we were connected to Minneapolis via the landline. Okay. Hi, this is Marty, WV5YM, Houston AmSatNet. There's an amateur weather satellite reception opportunities that are beyond the retired post fleet. And, of course, that's NOAA 15, 18, and 19. With the retirement of NOAA 15, NOAA 18, and NOAA 19, the long-running POES, P-O-E-S, the Polar Orbiting Operational Environment Satellites series, has officially ended service. Some in the community worry this marks the end of easily accessible weather imagery, but the outlook for amateur reception remains bright.
DL-123.
Russia's Meteor M satellites are now the mainstay for 137 megahertz reception. So their LRPT signals are strong and reliable, and with additional Meteor M launches planned, service is expected to continue well into the 2040s. Higher resolution imagery is also available on the 1.7 gigahertz band for those with modest upgrades in equipment. Okay, I guess you need a pretty good transponder there. You get up to 1.7 gigahertz or one of those newfangled radios. Europe's METOP series continues to transmit on L-band with METOP-B and -C expected to operate until 2027 and 2030. The newly launched METOP-SG satellites will extend coverage for another decade, ensuring continuity for hobbyists. In addition, the Arctic weather satellite and its planned successors, the Sterna series, will provide valuable radiometric data for weather monitoring. So, Andrew, maybe everything is not lost yet. You might still get some connectivity there for your weather, for the ferry and all those folks. And geostationary satellites also provide opportunities. Of course, we don't have one of those for amateur radio on our side of the world yet, but it could be coming in the future. And then again from Russia, Russia's Electro-L constellation broadcasts H/LRIT on 1691 megahertz with a new spacecraft north 5 degrees scheduled for launch this October. For those in the Americas, the GOES series will remain active through the 2030s, continuing HRIT and GRB service. The U.S. Space Force's EWS-G program further adds to the options, retasking former GOES satellites for continued imagery. China's Pyongyang 3 satellites and Korea's GK2A also contribute, while future developments in X-band reception are lowering the barrier for amateurs interested in higher resolution Earth observation. Advances in software such as SatDump are making it easier than ever to decode and process these signals on affordable hardware. The decommissioning of the POES fleet marks the end of an era, but not the end of a hobby. With a diverse mix of active and planned satellites across multiple bands, amateur weather satellite reception will remain an active part of the hobby. and is supported by a mix of current satellites and future missions. So for those interested in exploring these opportunities, the open source Sat Dump software can be used in the code imagery for many of the satellites mentioned above. And Sat Dump is available for download. It's over at www.satdump.org. That's SATDUMP.org. And of course, also Bruce has that link available for you over at AmSatNet.com. If you want to read the full article, it's over at satdump.org/posts/beyond-pose-amateur-satellite-reception. And, of course, that link is over at amsatnet.com. Thanks to Bruce. And we want to thank Lego 11 and satdump.com and the SatDump community for that information. Okay, this is Marty, WV5Y in the Houston AmSatNet. As we alluded to there a little bit earlier, coming in 2025, and a lot of people are looking forward to this, is the SDR Gen 2. It's a versatile GNU radio-based transverter that will cover from 144 MHz through 6 GHz continuously. And it's got direct VHF, UHF, 900 MHz, LS, and C-band operations. It will have up conversion possibilities to 5 and dime capability. So for future, it could there well be covering 5 and 10 GHz. And it does have all modes. CW, single sideband, FTA, narrowband FM, SSTV, ATV, all kinds of modes, just about everything you could think of. And the minimum downlink rate will be 1 mega MSPS. Now that's a mega scan per second, I do believe. And it is built to fly on the Fox Plus and the Golf Plus missions. So we'll be looking forward to that. And when that becomes available, and of course that comes from Ascent, the AmSat engineers, and that's the Advanced Satellite Communication and Exploration of New Technology. Okay, this is Marty, WV5Y in the Houston AmSatNet. Okay, we've got a Meteo Glider, which offers reusable radio sonde alternatives for high-altitude weather data collection. Swiss weather intelligence company Meteomatics has unveiled the Meteo Glider, a reusable glider platform designed to improve the way atmospheric data is gathered. Introduced in the spring of 2025, the Meteo Glider advances the familiar radio sonde concept with a sustainable GPS-guided recovery capability that promises significant operational and environmental benefits. Radio sondes carried aloft by weather balloons have often provided vital measurements of temperature, humidity, pressure, and wind conditions. These instruments supply essential input for forecasts, climate models, and atmospheric studies. However, conventional radio sondes are almost always lost after deployment. Out of approximately 600,000 units launched worldwide each year, an estimated 80% are never recovered, leaving most as non-reusable debris. Well, Well, the medial glider overcomes this challenge by gliding back under control after its flight. Constructed of lightweight foam and weighing only 250 grams, the vehicle ascends to heights of about 110,000 feet before release. Guided by GPS, the medial glider can return to its launch point or a designated location, typically completing the descent in around 25 minutes while reaching speeds of nearly 460 feet per second. Performance remains on par with traditional systems. Meteo glides collect the same high-quality meteorological data as radio sounds, but with the added benefit of multiple reuses. Each unit can be recovered and redeployed as many as 50 times, extending the service life of its lithium batteries and the electronics.
BL-123.
This significantly reduces the recurring expense of atmospheric soundings while also addressing sustainability goals. Another advantage is the practicality of operation. Meteo gliders do not require special flight permissions and can be deployed as readily as conventional balloon-borne instruments. Their recoverability reduces waste, lowers operating costs, and minimizes the environmental footprint associated with routine meteorological monitoring. This technology originated with Swiss startup R2 Home, which Meteomatics acquired in late 2024 following a $22 million funding round. Together with the company's established Meteo drone system, Meteo gliders represent a new chapter in scalable, sustainable atmospheric sensing. By combining innovation with proven methods, Meteomatics aims to reshape global weather intelligence practices with tools that are both economical and environmentally responsible. Okay, we like hearing that, and had no idea they were launching, they said 800,000 of them a year? That's a lot. Okay, and 600,000 units launched worldwide each year. That's a lot. Okay, let's see here. You can read the full article. Yeah, you can read the full article. It's over at www.aero-articles/meteomatics-unveils-v-meteoglider-a-high-altitude-weather-data-revolution. And, of course, that links at amsatnet.com. Thanks to Bruce. And we want to thank Mikhail Ross from Aerotime.com and Meteomatics for that information. Okay, this is Marty, WV5Y in the Houston AmSat Net. We're just a little past the bottom of the hour. We're going to take a quick standby and see if we have any more check-ins. So any check-ins to the Houston AmSat Net, come now.
K85B2J.
Okay, good evening, Herbert. You got a pretty good signal tonight, so we're glad to have you down there. And that's KD5PQJ over there in West Houston.
Confirmed.
Okay, very good. We got anybody else? Anybody else want to climb on board? Okay, this is Marty, WV5Y in the Houston AmSat Net. All right, let's see. We've got some information about SpaceX and Starship Flight 10 to demonstrate expanded booster and upper stage test objectives, which they did, and they stressed those heat tiles there, a few places where they actually were even missing some, and they put the thing in an attitude so that it stressed out the bottom flaps, which they did sort of catch on fire and sort of deteriorate a little bit. And then there was sort of at one point kind of a little bit of an explosion looking thing, and the bottom skirt, I guess, did suffer some damage, but they were kind of expecting that. That's, I guess, why they were stressing it so heavily, to find out where its tolerances are. Okay, but since that already happened today, we'll go ahead and read this, but it's a little bit behind the time. SpaceX is preparing for the 10th integrated test flight of its Starship Super Heavy launch system from Starbase, Texas. And, of course, they tried Sunday, they tried Monday, and then the third time was the charm. They got it off today. Let's see, liftoff was targeted for Sunday, August 24th, with a launch window from 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. Central Time. Live webcast did begin 30 minutes before liftoff, and then they had to postpone the whole thing and turn it into a wet dress rehearsal because of an anvil cloud that wouldn't move out of the area. Of course, they only, once they're ready to go, they've only got about an 8-minute wait time. So it didn't happen in that time. But then today, when they even actually here, it looked more cloudy. I guess they didn't have any close clouds down there, and it was a spectacular launch. Okay, this mission followed the completion of investigations into the loss of Starship on flight number 9 and the ship 36 static fire anomaly. And that's when the whole thing blew up, when they tried to gas it up one time. SpaceX reports that both hardware and operational changes have been implemented to improve reliability, with technical summaries of investigations available online. Super Heavy booster will attempt multiple flight experiments on a trajectory toward an offshore landing point in the Gulf of Mexico. No, that's not right. In the Indian Ocean. Objectives... Oh, the booster. Okay, yeah, the booster came down in the Gulf of Mexico. Objectives include a controlled flip and boost back maneuver first demonstrated on Flight 9, which worked again. It was designed to conserve propellant and increase the payload capacity. These trials are aimed at expanding the operational envelope and validating booster recovery techniques for future missions. The booster's landing burn experiments were a primary focus of Flight 10. SpaceX plans to intentionally disable one of the three center engines during the landing sequence, relying on a backup engine from the middle ring to complete the burn, and that did happen. The booster will then transition to a two-engine hover maneuver over the ocean surface before shutdown and providing data on redundancy and landing performance. And it did. It hovered there right over the ocean and then dropped into it, just like Starship did. Starship upper stage will attempt several in-space demonstrations, including the deployment of 8 Starlink mass simulators, a Raptor engine relay, and multiple re-entry experiments. To stress test the thermal protection system, a significant number of heat shield tiles have been removed, while metallic tile alternatives and active cooling systems will be evaluated. These measures are intended to expose vulnerabilities and refine re-entry survivability. The Additional objectives include testing functional catch fittings and assessing rear flap performance during maximum entry dynamic pressure. Yeah, they took a little damage. According to SpaceX, these experiments are vital steps toward the development of a rapidly reusable launch system. With manufacturing ramping up at Star Factory in Texas and new launch infrastructure under construction in both Texas and Florida, Starship continues to progress towards operational readiness for future missions. Okay, you can see the official SpaceX update. Of course, you can just go over to SpaceX.com and click on Watch, and you can see the whole thing. And for Flight 10, but you can go to www.spacex.com/launches/starship-flight-10 and maybe check out the SpaceX shop for a new t-shirt while you're at it. And see, we want to thank SpaceX for that information.
CL-123, this is the W5BSA repeater.
Okay, this is Marty, WV5Y in the Houston AmSat Net. We got a message from Clay over KG4OZW. IRC, the Internet Relay Chat System, that Rachy is looking into getting her ham ticket. So, way to go, Rachy, and I hope it's an endeavor that you will value and pursue. Alright, the 2025 AmSat President's Club coins have arrived, so you can celebrate the 40th anniversary of amateur radio on human spaceflight. You can help support the Golf and the Fox Plus projects. You can join the AmSat President's Club today, and it's right over at www.amsat.org/join-the-amsat-presidents-club. We do have some changes to the AmSat North America TLE distribution. The two-line elements, or TLEs, often referred to as Keplerian elements, or KEPs in the amateur community, are the inputs to the STP-4 standard mathematical model spacecraft orbits used by most amateur tracking programs. Weekly updates are completely adequate for most amateur satellites, including the ISS, so just download the KEP file once a week and it'll update your satellite tracking programs and everything will be in the right place, you know, if your times are correct. And then TLE bulletin files are updated daily in the first hour of the UTC day, and new bulletin files will be posted immediately after reliable elements become available for new amateur satellites. Okay, you can find more info on Keplerian elements over at www.amsat.org/Keplerian-elements-resources. And with Ham TV becoming active on the International Space Station, orbital elements are now daily in www.amsat.org/TLE. And let's see, that happens at 0018 and 1218 UTC. The intention is to have high quality TLE available to accurately calculate Doppler shift for the 2.935 GHz downlink. And there are observations comparing these TLE to those that were calculated based in Fitterites and TLE produced by Johnson Space Center the last time Ham TV was active and desired. So you can write J jfitzgerald@amsat.org, and that's jfitzgerald@amsat.org. Okay, the action is the following satellite has been removed from this week's TLE distribution, and that's Veronica. And that's the NORAD catalog ID 58261. Decayed from orbit on or about the 15th of August, 2025. So we want to thank AMSAT Orbital Elements Page for that information. Okay, we got Veronica coming down. Hopefully it won't be Archie next. Amateurs and others around the world may listen in on contacts between amateurs operating in schools and allowing students to interact with astronauts and cosmonauts and JAXA astronauts in Japan aboard the International Space Station. And the downlink frequency on which to listen is on 145.800 MHz worldwide. There was a contact with Youngsters on the Air in Jamville, France. They had a contact direct via FX5YOTA. The ISS call sign was OR4ISS, and the scheduled crew member was Mike Fink, KE5AIT. And the air's mentor was F6ICS. The contact was 8/19/2025 at 09/18/30 UTC. All right, they did have a live stream, so that's probably still over there at YouTube.com if you want to watch it. And it's at YouTube.com/watch?V=MarkTCR6NJO. And then, let's see, there was the Nixter Stellar, formerly Gemini 1, from Lima, Peru. They had a telebridge via VK4KHZ with NA1SS, and they spoke with Zena Cardman, KJ5MCMN. And the mentor was VE6JBJ. The contact was 8/20/25 at 14:07 UTC. And congratulations to the next year stellar student, Zena, and the mentor at VE6JBJ. Okay, we still got a contact that's going to happen in a couple of days. And that's the Orion Primary School in Alberton, South Africa. And that'll be direct via ZS9LSO. The ISS call sign is scheduled to be NA1SS. And again, the crew member is Mike Fink, KE5AIT. The Earth mentor is IN3GHZ. And the contact is Friday, 8/29/2025 at 09:35/44 UTC. Times the school may make a last-minute decision to do a live stream or run into a last-minute glitch requiring a change of the URL, but the folks over at ARIS may not get the URL in time for publication. So you can always check live.aris.org to see if the school is live streaming. Crossband repeater on the International Space Station continues to be active. It's on 145.990 MHz up with a peel tone of 67, and then you listen on the downlink frequency, and that's on 437.800 MHz. If any crew member is so inclined, all they have to do is pick up the mic. They can raise the volume up on the radio and talk on the crossband repeater. So give a listen. You just never know. You might end up talking to one of the astronauts. mentioned in the packet system on the ISS is also active. It's on 145.825 megahertz up and down. And as always, if there's an EVA, a docking or an undocking, the ARRIS radios are turned off as part of the safety protocol. And all times are approximate, so it's recommended you do your own orbital prediction on when the passes are going to be, or start listening about 10 minutes before the times that we have listed. And the latest info on the operation mode for the ISS can be found at www.ARRIS.org/contact-status-of-ISS-stations.html. Okay, and the latest list of frequencies in use on the ISS can be found over at www.ARRIS.org/contact-v-ISS.html. And we want to thank Charlie Stefana, AJ9N, one of the ARRIS operation team mentors, for that information. Okay, this is Marty, WV5Y in the Houston AmSatNet. Once again, you can go over to www.amsatnet.com. Thanks to Bruce there. That's our website. And you can look at links and satellite award information and stuff. And then you can go over to www.amsat.org. And you can find out the frequencies that the satellites are operating on and the status, whether or not they're operational or not. There's information about the upcoming symposium. And then there's also the store on the internet, so you can buy satellite antennas.
DL-123.
Okay, this is Marty, WV5Y with the Houston AmSatNet. AmSat ambassadors provide presentations, demonstrate communicating through amateur satellites, and host information tables at club meetings, AmFest, conventions, maker fairs, and other events. And AmSat Ambassador Clint Bradford, K6LCS, says, think a 75-minute presentation on working the EASY satellites would be appropriate for your club or event. Let me know by emailing Clint, and that's at K6LCSCLINT@gmail.com, or you can call Clint. And that's at 909-999-7287. Clint has never given the exact same show twice. Each of his 150-plus presentations so far has been customized and tailored to his audiences. Have some scheduled events taking place. We got the Northeast Ham Exposition. That already happened. That was August 21st to the 24th in New England. Hope everybody enjoyed Ham X and the New England ARRL Convention. Okay, September the 6th, though, we've got the Greater Louisville Ham Fest. And that's at Paraquet Springs Conference Center at 395 Paraquet Springs Drive in Shepherdsville, Kentucky, 40165. And that's at louisvillehamfest.wixsite.com/louisvillehamfest. And you should see Bo Lowry, W4FCL, the ambassador of the AmSat Ambassador Program there. Okay, then we've got the North Star Radio Convention, and Mitch, 80HJ, is going to try to make that one. That's October the 11th, 2025, in the Hennepin Technical College at 9000 Brooklyn Boulevard in Brooklyn Park, Minnesota, 55445, and the URL is northstarradio.org. Then the big one, the 43rd Annual AmSat Space Symposium and Annual General Meeting, will be October the 16th through the 19th at the Holiday Inn and Suites, Phoenix Airport North at 1515 North 44th Street in Phoenix, Arizona. And that's 85008. And the details are over at www.amsat.org/2025/symposium. Okay, hey, if you're interested in becoming an AMSAT ambassador, well, what do AMSAT ambassadors do? They provide presentations, they demonstrate communicating through amateur satellites, lots of times at HamFest, and they host information tables at club meetings, HamFest conventions, maker fairs, and other events. So you can find more info, just go to www.amsat.org/ambassador. And one thing, Bo Lowry, W4FTL, the director of the AMSAT Ambassador Program, for that information. AMSAT Remove Before Flight key tags are available, and they are the real thing, the same thing that are used on the satellites. They're lovely red with white lettering and the white AMSAT logo. And your $20 donation does go to help fly a Fox Plus satellite, and it does include first class postage only in the United States, sorry. And you can order today, and that's at www.amsat.org/AMSAT-remove-before-flight-keychain. United States is racing to be the first station to deploy a nuclear reactor on the lunar surface following new orders from acting NASA astronaut administrator Sean Duffy. His directive, issued July 31st, calls for fast-tracking lunar nuclear power to stay ahead of China and Russia, who have announced joint plans to build a reactor by the mid-2030s. Duffy warned that if rivals succeed first, they could impose keep-out zones that would threaten U.S. access and undermine the Artemis program, which aims to return astronauts to the moon in 2027. The order requires NASA to appoint a program leader within 30 days and expands on previous work with the Department of Energy to develop fission surface power, producing at least 40 kilowatts of power. Since long-term lunar operations are estimated to require at least 100 kilowatts of electrical power, or about the consumption of 80 to 100 U.S. homes, nuclear power is seen as critical for sustaining life on the moon and enabling future Mars missions. In addition, Duffy issued a separate directive to speed up commercial space station development as the International Space Station nears retirement by 2030. And we want to thank CNN for that information. Okay, SpaceX successfully launched the U.S. Space Force's X-37B space plane aboard a Falcon 9 rocket from Kennedy Space Center on August 21st, 2025, marking the start of its eighth mission. The booster, making its sixth flight, landed at Cape Canaveral Space Force Station just over 8 minutes after liftoff. The Boeing-built X-37B, part of a two-vehicle fleet, has previously flown missions lasting between 224 and 909 days. Okay, we got a check-in there from Vern, W0RCR, up there in Winston, Missouri. Of course, thanks to him, he does transmit our net on Saturday, on the weekend, on 1.860 megahertz. Okay, you can join AMSAT today by going to launch.amsat.org. And in addition to regular membership, AMSAT offers membership to societies, which is a recognized group, club, or organization. Primary and secondary school students are eligible for membership at one half the standard yearly rate. Post-secondary school students enrolled in at least a half-time status shall be eligible for the student rate for a maximum of 6 post-secondary years in the status. We have memberships available for annual and lifetime terms. You can contact info@amsat.org for additional membership information. And we get a 7-3, and remember to help keep amateur radio in space. That comes from this week's ANS editor, Mitch Ahrensdorf, 80HJ, and that's MAHRENSTORFF at amsat.org. Okay, and as Mitch is reiterating, Starship Flight 10 was really fun to watch, and just about everything went right on schedule the way it was supposed to. So, 10th time is definitely the charm. All right, well, everybody stay safe out there. Keep playing with those radios, making those satellite contacts. And then from Andy, W5ACM, Bruce, KK5DO, up in North Houston, and myself, Marty, WV5Y, in Northwest Houston, we say 7-3 from the Houston AMSAT Net.